A lot can change in a year. No one knows that better right now than Charlotte Worthington. The Manchester BMX rider began 2018 working 40 hours a week as a chef. She ended the year as part of British Cycling's BMX Park World Class programme. BMX Freestyle Park makes its Olympic debut in Tokyo 2020, and for 22-year-old Charlotte, representing Britain is one of the long-term aims. But you can't achieve those aims if you don't focus on the short-term stuff as well. That means working flat out and perfecting her tricks and routines from here on, so it's a good thing she's never satisfied. The sport's appearance at Tokyo also opened it up to a wave of new audiences, but you could argue Charlotte is already doing that herself. She is, after all, a female rider in a man's world, where, for whatever reason, perception has led us to considering BMX riders as predominantly male. But for Charlotte, leading the way for other riders is just as important as her aims to be one of the best there is.
Charlotte, thanks so much for coming onto the show. How is everything, considering we've just had New Year and Christmas?
Well, thanks. Thanks for having me on the show. And it was a tough one getting back from Christmas. Did have that good week off, a lot of chocolate, all them M&S biscuits. I definitely paid for it. But yeah, definitely get back in the swing of things. Halfway through January now, so yeah, back at the gym, back on it.
Exactly. Back to skate park. Yeah, and we've all definitely paid for Christmas period, I can tell you. First things first, I'll kind of start with 2018. And you started that year working 40 hours a week as a chef, and you ended the year as part of British Cycling's BMX Freestyle Park World Class programme, not to mention the first World Cup podium as well in July. How do you put the last 12 months into words?
Oh, jeez. It's hard. Yeah, I started the year just working my butt off at a kitchen, eating really badly, if like eating at all, not getting enough sleep. And I was just so lucky that this opportunity and all this, it just timed perfectly. Someone from British Cycling contacted me. We did a little trip, little team selection thing. And yeah, I was really, really lucky to be offered with that opportunity. And if that hadn't come along, I probably would still be there. So it's such a drastic change in my lifestyle. Like, huge.
How did that opportunity come along then? Was it a case of someone scouting you or just seeing you competing, doing what you do?
I hadn't done a lot of competing before then. I was mainly trying to get myself out on Instagram, knowing people who know people. And I just heard through the grapevine that BMX was going to the Olympics and that Great Britain was going to look for a team. So then someone put me in contact with the guy who was scouting the team at the time. And yeah, we had a little induction with him, introduced myself. And then in February, they all booked like a big bunch of us to go to North Carolina.
Yeah.
To go ride. Yeah, a bunch of different parks. They watched us ride, assessed us, and yeah, since then they picked out a team from there.
Exactly, yeah. I've got a couple of questions on that world-class program specifically for later. But I kind of want to bring it back to life as a chef, really, because you mentioned working your butt off and eating badly if you ate at all. How hectic is life as a chef? Because it strikes me as a profession where you are on the go constantly.
Yeah, totally. That's just it to a pinpoint. It's kind of, there's never nothing to do in a kitchen. If, you know, all the food has been sent, then can you prep something? If all the prep's done, can you clean something? If all the cleaning's done, can you fill in all the documents and paperwork? So it's very easy, it's all too easy to stay an extra hour before or after your shift. And then when you're home, like coming an extra hour early the next day. It was very difficult to get a work and riding balance, and I genuinely found it pretty impossible.
Yeah, I was going to say then, bearing in mind how all consuming that role is, where does the BMX fit into that? Did you actually find enough time to do what you loved as much as you could?
not at the start of the year. At the start of the year, I was at a point where I was riding like once every 2 weeks, which is just like nowhere near enough. I wasn't able to progress because every time I got back on my bike, it was like relearning stuff that I'd learned 2 weeks ago. So when I started to like switch, I was asking my boss for less and less hours. Kind of got down to part time. I did get to ride a lot more then, but I could never find like a full balance of, because chefing work is so tiring. So then on your days off, you're absolutely shattered. And you don't really want to train, and then vice versa, BMX is tiring, so you don't enjoy yourself at work.
Yeah, and you'd rather just lie down, I presume, when you do have your days off.
Yeah, you'd rather just watch Netflix all day.
Exactly. From a health standpoint then, and a nutrition standpoint, how would you kind of categorise or sum up your health at that time?
At that time, I loved a good McDonald's breakfast before my shift, standard, double sausage and egg bagel.
Good shout.
Yeah, and then continuing the day, I'd probably have a Red Bull or two and some Milky Bar buttons. Yeah, real tasty. And I'm still a sucker for that. But the drastic change in that was just, I've got so much more education on my food, like on proteins and not all carbohydrates and fats are bad and when to eat them and supplements. Like, that's all thanks to British Cycling as well, that they've taught me that.
Exactly. And I'll come on now to the World Class program, because obviously for those not in the know, and you've alluded to it already, BMX Freestyle Park will be making its debut at the Tokyo 2020 Olympics. That selection camp that you mentioned in the US for the World Class program, take me through that, because it strikes me as an occasion where there's a lot of pressure on you, not only to put in the work in the first place, but then to perform when that occasion to perform actually arrives, because it's not just you that's competing for those spots on the World Class program, is it?
Yeah, I think they tried to make it as little, like, minimum pressure as possible. They said, like, we just had to ride and enjoy ourselves. We went to three different parks, and at those parks, we did, like, just a fun contest. So we'd have a day getting used to the course and finding some lines and having some fun. The next day, we'd all do a minute run each, and then it's just a mock contest, and then they'd say like this person came out on top because of this, then the next day it'd be a different, totally different person because the parks were so different, and that's what definitely would highlight people's strengths and weaknesses. There was like one park that I really struggled on to get any of my tricks out because it's so big and like rickety, and then there's other parks that like I would like fly at, like Daniel Dare's place. And there was only two girls on the trip. There was supposed to be another one, Izzy. Unfortunately, she couldn't make it, I think, because of her wrist. So it was me and Emma were both, like, it was still real fun. Like, they kept it really relaxed and chilled. It wasn't actually, like, a stressful experience. I had that pressure on myself because I knew I wanted to perform, and I'm quite competitive anyway, so I put the pressure on myself, but they were really chilled about it.
Do you handle that pressure quite well then when you do put it on yourself?
Yeah, I mean, majority of the time I'd say I would. There's a line in like an Eminem song and he says, I bully myself because I make me do what I put my mind to, and that always resonates with me. But there are times when, you know, this is my first year competing in 2018, and there's times where it got real hard and the stress like does get to you, and you realize the only thing that is putting pressure on you is like yourself. So there's been like lows of the year as well where it has got to me, and I've learned so much more from failure than I have from success. I've learned a lot from that, and the mental game of contests, it's not just about your riding, it's about keeping it together.
When you find out that you're on the World Class program, what does that feel like in the first place, but also how much of a difference has that really made to what you want to do in your sport?
Well, I was just absolutely mind blown, and I didn't even know what my life had in store for me after that, because, you know, I told my boss at the kitchen and the head chef, and he was like happy sad. He was like, yeah, I'm happy for you, but I'm sad that I'm losing such a good chef. So that was kind of weird, and like not great, but
it strikes me as something daunting as well, telling him.
Yeah, I was like, oh well, cheers mate, thanks, you should just be like super stoked for me, but never mind. Yeah, so yeah, I was totally mind blown. I was like, what is, I'd never competed before, so I didn't know what this lifestyle was like. It was a lot of traveling around the world, all these new experiences, meeting new people, completely changing my lifestyle, my diet, my activity, mentality. So that just felt like totally amazing, and it all just came to reality when it, like 2 weeks later, I was on a plane to Japan. It's madness.
What do you, it strikes me as, because of how quick it's happened, that it's something you need to learn quite quickly, how to deal with that life. What's maybe the biggest thing, most important thing you've learnt in the last year, now that you've jumped on this roller coaster?
Ooh, that's a good one, because I've learnt a lot. Ooh, that's actually quite tough. The biggest thing that I've learnt, I think contest-wise, the biggest thing I've learned is you don't need the biggest banging tricks ever to win a contest. You don't need to like change the earth to win a contest. It's like there's a lot more tactics and mentality and skill that goes into it. That's contest-wise. And then, I don't know, stuff I've learned about myself, obviously learned a lot more about mentality, got a lot more mentally strong. I couldn't really pinpoint it to one thing. It's been, because it's been so drastic.
I mean, and you mentioned, I suppose, maybe the understated side of competing actually does quite well in terms of going out and winning a competition. What is it, for people who don't know BMX all that well, what is it people are looking for when you do actually go out and compete?
So BMX contests work, there's in the boys they have it's broken down a bit more because they've got a whole lot more riders, but generally there's a qualifiers, and then you could qualify into the semi-finals, and then there's a finals. Your runs running up to that are 1 minute. The first two contests in the qualifiers and the semi-finals, both of your runs count. So that means that your score will, like both scores will count to one score. So you want both your runs to be good. Mm-hmm. And that generally means just as simple as staying on your bike. Because once you've come off the bike, the stakes are so high now that it's going to the Olympics that generally that's kind of an indicator you're probably not going to make it. So the first two runs, you're going to want to stay on your bike and just get some basic tricks down. And then in the finals, it's just one of your runs count. And that's when you can go for it a bit more and take a bit more of a risk. And in those two, in all them contests, the judges are looking for consistency in the first two, because you have two runs that both count. So you need consistency, style, like creativity with lines. Lines are really important. You don't just ride the park the same as everyone else. Then obviously your tricks, the technicality and like difficulty of them, and also like the height. How high are you going? Are you 2 foot higher than everyone else, or are you under the coping?
And then we come on to July and that first podium place at the World Cup held in Edmonton in Canada. How big a moment was that? Do you sense that's a real stepping stone to you doing that more consistently?
Yeah, that was a real highlight of the year. I think I learned a lot from that success. I learned a lot, and yeah, I think it's still a big step to from third to first. I think someone's told me that it's a whole lot easier to move up 10 places from like 40th to 30th, but the hardest jumps are from third to second, second to first. So it's still like a long way, but it kind of, it's definitely a confidence booster. It's there in your mind. Yeah, it's like, you know, you can make podium. You know there's more in you. You know there's more potential. So it's very motivating. And I always think back to that contest because it was such a highlight.
That's interesting then, that you kind of draw strength from that, if you like, from when you were successful, and you can always go back to that to give yourself confidence if you need it.
Yeah, definitely. Mm-hmm. When I go into contests now, I definitely think about that contest and think, yeah, you know you can make podium, Charlotte. You know you've got it in you. You just got to let it out.
So let's kind of go back then to the start, because we always, if we've got someone on from a sport that people maybe don't know so well, we like to delve a little bit into how they first got into that sport and why they're so good at it in the first place. Where does your BMX journey begin? How did you first get involved?
My BMX journey began 2.5 years ago. Well, technically, it began a whole lot earlier than that, because I actually used to ride scooters, kind of professionally. Yeah, that was just something I picked up in high school. I thought it was really fun. Made a load of friends through it, and it was something I pursued for about 6 years. I just absolutely loved it. I loved the adrenaline of learning tricks, and so being in that sport, you also do that on a skate park. So I was always surrounded by BMXers, made a lot of BMX friends. I was very inspired by BMXers, watched a lot of videos on YouTube more than I did scoot riding. And I knew one day I was going to switch to that, but I was quite young. I started when I was like 13 or 14. So I did it till I was like coming up to 20. And then it got to a point where I felt a bit too old for it. A lot had changed. And I really wanted a new challenge. I wanted something new to have as an ambition. And everything, I had a BMX for a little while and I dabbled with it, but everything I did on it was new. And that's what was so addictive. And that was why scooter riding was so addictive. So every trick I did, whether it was as small as doing a table or a toboggan, which are really basic tricks, it was still new to me. And you just get that buzz off it.
Does that maybe give us a little bit of insight into your personality as well, that you're almost looking for the next thing and the next thing to try out or to try and become good at?
Yeah, I think I probably guilt trip myself into making sure I'm always pushing myself, and I am a bit of a perfectionist. I'll get kind of addicted to doing a trick until I know it, I'm confident in it and it feels right and it looks good, and then I've got to like make sure I push myself onto the next thing, because I'd hate to look back and think, oh, what have I accomplished this week? Oh, I did the same thing every single day. That would just be like so bad. I'd hate myself for it. And in the long run, I'd hate to get to the Olympics and think, and God forbid something messed up, or I'd hate to look back and think, geez, I wish I did this a little bit more in my training. So I'm always just trying to maximize what I'm doing, really.
Exactly, yeah. Never satisfied. It's always the next
thing. No, I don't think I'm ever satisfied. As soon as I've learnt one thing, I'm like, what can I add to that? Or what new ramp could I do this over? How could I work this into my runs? It's kind of always going through my mind.
Yeah, and that mentality probably explains why you are where you are at the moment. Next question is a very big overarching question. Is BMX a man's world?
Oof. It is a man's world. Like, straight up, it is a man's world. It's male-dominated. If you think of a BMXer, your first thought is going to be a male. You wouldn't typically think of a girl doing those tricks. But I think the only thing that's actually defining that is people's mentality. I think a lot of girls would probably be great on a bike, and it's just, it is big on mentality. If you see BMX as a male sport and you think, oh, I can't do that because I'm a girl, or boys are all stronger than me, or I'm too scared, then, you know, that the only thing stopping you is you. So I think, yeah, it is a man's world, but it doesn't mean that it has to be that way forever, and I don't think it will be.
Yeah, I mean, is that all down to the fact that it's based on people's perceptions, whether that's from the inside and the outside, and maybe because you see more men doing it, maybe a lot of girls don't think that's the way for them to go?
Yeah, I totally think it's perception. There's boys who are surprised to see female BMXers as much as the general public would be surprised to see a female on a BMX at a skate park. But if you went to a feast stop, then there's like over 30 girls there that compete from all around the world. So that just proves that it's really not. And that's like, those numbers have like doubled in the past year or two. So it's rapidly growing, and I think girls are getting a lot more belief in themselves and enjoying it, and that's what it's all about anyway, is having fun, so girls can enjoy it too. It's not just for boys to enjoy.
Is there a reason then, do you think, why media companies, sponsors, whatever, might have leaned towards the men's side of it? Because I suppose it's not just BMX, you can put it down to a lot of other sports where the men's side of that particular game is maybe given far more focus by sponsorships and media companies than the women's side.
Yeah, again, that's kind of a tough one because no one would like to say that. No one wants to say, oh, like, male footballers get more attention and because they're male footballers, and technically you'd say, like, oh, they're better, but that's not the case. And then it's the same with girls BMX. Like, maybe a lot of male riders get more attention and sponsorship because of their ability and they're able to do a lot more, but that's not because they're male. So I think maybe it's a bit of an easy option to just look straight for a dude that's doing BMX in for a company rather than sponsor a girl. Maybe they think it's like a risky move, or maybe they're just doing their pure product appeal. I'm not sure how many guys would look at a female BMXer riding like a BMX part and think, wow, she rides that. That makes me want to ride it. But I'm not too sure, to be honest.
How much of what you do is driven by maybe the thought of being a role model for a girl out there who might want to get into BMX one day?
I think I'm quite massively motivated and driven by that, because I have a lot of people that do look up to me and send me nice messages, and it's nice to have an influence on younger people because I was a younger person then and I'd look up to all the riders. And you know, I used to look up to some of the male BMXers and think they were kind of like bullies, really. They used to be pretty mean. And yeah, that maybe that was because I was just a young little scooter kid. But yeah, through my own experiences, I just want to be like a good role model and someone who can point like a younger person in the right direction if they really want to ride bikes. I've got a few friends that I really try and help and guide because I think they've got like potential. And then it's the same with anyone new that I've met, like if they want to have a picture with me or if they've like seen me at contests, I'll always like give them the time of day and try and just be positive and encourage them.
Exactly. And we're talking like you've been in it for quite some time, but it's easy to forget you are still 22, I think I'm right in saying.
Yeah, you're right.
So obviously there's still a long way to go. With the Olympics, obviously, next year now that we're in 2019, how much of a focus is that for you? Is that the number one aim at the moment?
It's the number one long-term goal, but I can't really focus on the long-term thing until I get all the short-term things out the way. Like if I need to make sure that I perform at these FIS contests throughout the year, like pretty consistently. I need to make sure I'm doing the little things, and then that will all add up to the big thing, yeah.
Mm-hmm. So it's all about getting the short-term stuff right.
Yeah,
first.
Totally. There's a long way to go, even though it's next year, because BMX is like so new, and especially the girl side of it is so new and it's progressing so rapidly. I need to be like in the present, really, and focus on what I'm doing now, the little things that will just add up, because I can't just focus on the end goal because we need to get there first.
In terms of then, it might be difficult to say now, but having the sport at the Olympics now, what do you think that will do in terms of coverage and maybe recognition for the sport in terms of growing it?
I think it should do huge things, because even if it does encourage kids to buy like a mainstream BMX from perhaps a supermarket, which isn't great because it doesn't support like the local shops, but say a part on that bike breaks, they're going to come to a local BMX shop to get it replaced, or they're going to get that one signature part. And I think it will do huge, because at the end of the day, it's quite a cool sport and it's used a lot in adverts already. And I think with the coverage from like the Olympics, I think people will be pretty blown away, because there's a whole lot of people out there that don't know what it is.
Yeah. And it strikes me as a sport that's particularly accessible as well, because I mean, here where I'm living in Chelmsford, there's a skate park in the main park in town. So it seems like it's something that's really easy to get involved in if you want to. Once you've got your bike, then you can just go and see where it takes you.
Yeah, definitely. Most places have a local little skate park anyway. It doesn't have to be like the best thing in the world or the biggest thing in the world. You know, I started on like really little ramps. Everyone's got to start on something small. So it is very accessible. Bikes are very affordable. And then like I started through scoot riding is like a bit of a gateway. It's very similar skills. It puts you in that environment, And I think people seeing it on media, they'll be really encouraged.
We've touched on it already, but short term, what's next in the pipeline for you? What in terms of training, and where can people see you competing next?
Short term, I've very recently moved to a village just next to Corby, which is in the Midlands, kind of in the middle of nowhere. So short term, I'm just very focused on my riding. I really want to get some tricks nailed, like for real, like on the wood. You can ride a resi ramp, which is, it gives you just a little bit of a softer landing. So I want to get quite a lot of things on the wood. I'm constantly trying to improve my cardio fitness. So a lot of gym sessions. And then looking on forwards, there's some word of a little trip to America, maybe, with some training with the whole team and our coach, Jamie. So that should be really good.
Yeah, exactly. And for someone who is from Manchester, I think I'm right in saying, how is village life treating you?
Oh, it's it's real exciting. No, I came from the city of everything. Manchester's got it all. And my whole life is up there, like my friends and my family and my whole history. I'd never moved house. So this is the first time moving house. I've moved out on here on my own. It's a good thing I like the countryside. And Corby's got the essentials. I mean, it's got a Nando's, so we're pretty sorted there. Oh,
then you're sorted. That's all you
need. Yeah, so there, we're sorted. It's got the basics.
Yeah, exactly. Last question. As ever, when I have a guest on, I was given a little opportunity to plug their sport, as it were, to someone who might want to get involved. So in your words, why should someone, if they're listening, give BMX a go?
It makes you feel so good. You are totally part of a community. It's like a happy addiction when you land that first trick, when you go down the ramp for the first time that you were so scared about. You get such a rush of endorphins and adrenaline. It's just, it'll make you so happy. You'll make so many new friends. You'll grow as a person and learn so much about yourself. It's just totally worthwhile.
Well said, and that's messages we can certainly get behind as well. And with that, thank you so much again, Charlotte, for coming on to the podcast and telling us about your sport and obviously the journey you've taken through it. It's still very early days, so I'm sure we'll all be keeping tabs on you and see where it takes you through this year and on to next year and the Olympic year in the near future.
Yeah, thank you so much for having me. It's been great.
Thanks so much.
Thank you for tuning in to our BMX special episode on Sportsbill. Before I leave you, I have a couple of messages to share. As always, you can follow us on our social media channels. We're on Twitter and we're on Facebook and we're on Instagram. All of our handles are Sportsbill Pod. You can also get in touch with us via email. Our email address is sportsbillpod@gmail.com. It's also a very big congratulations to Ian Murfin and Ryan Anderton, who were the first to correctly get the answer to our trivia question in the last episode. The Tour de France was, of course, first held in 1903, so well done to both of them. That is it from me on this special episode of the podcast. Myself and Will are going to be back on February the 3rd with our next instalment, where we will be joined by another sporting star who will be guest hosting the show with us, just like Shona did on episode 34. Details will be following on social media, but for now, it's a goodbye, listeners, and we will see you very soon.